Welcome back. Fred Grandy filling in for Andy Parks this week. And we are covering and staying close to the story you've probably already heard about. This is the attack on the U.S. Embassy in Ankara, Turkey. Guy Taylor covering this at the State Department for the Washington Times. He joins us now. Guy, how you doing?
Hi, how are you, Fred?
I'm good, but I'm looking at your story right now, and it says, your update says, authorities suspect that what the U.S. State Department has described as a quote-unquote Marxist-Leninist and vehemently anti-U.S. organization may be to blame for this suicide, which I guess claimed the lives of two people, the bomber and a security guard. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right, so vehemently anti-U.S. This is not necessarily al-Qaeda then, right?
No. Actually, that's what's interesting about this is that, and this is coming from Turkish authorities, and there's more on it that's been developing in the last couple of hours, but that it's not an al-Qaeda-linked group at all. In fact, it's a local Turkish political organization that's been around for decades, and the State Department had fingered this organization in the late 90s as a terrorist organization.
This would be the Revolutionary People's Liberation Party or Front?
Correct. Okay. Revolutionary People's Liberation Party, right.
Okay, well, the reason I turned immediately to al-Qaeda is because just yesterday we were talking to Bill Gertz, who was talking about al-Qaeda posting on a new website the prediction that they were going to be attacking a lot of sites in the West, and then one day later we see this.
Right, yes, absolutely, and that's actually been talked about here over at the State Department today, and that particular story and that idea that, you know, that this would be timed like this. But I think we just have to be a little bit careful with the U.S. In the administration, how they're responding to this. I mean, the White House and the State Department both sort of saying, well, if Turkish authorities are coming out and claiming that DNA from the suicide bomber already indicates that this is an individual who was held in a Turkish prison for ties to this local group, I think, you know, we got to wait and see a little bit, but it's certainly a complicated and unusual case. Let's put it like that. So I don't want to get on with you here and you know, run away in one direction or another.
No, I understand.
Developing
that. But I guess one of the things I would ask is if the grudge that the DHKPC, the Revolutionary
Right.
People's Liberation Party Front, has, is really against the Turkish government for throwing somebody in prison, why are they attacking our embassy?
It's a good question. I mean, I think the idea would be that that the United States is working. This group is also vehemently anti-NATO.
Of course,
so the United States and NATO are working together right now with Turkey in shuttling support and arms into Syria. For instance, Patriot missiles.
Yeah.
That you know. So it's really too early for me to completely speculate. But you could make the argument, and this appears to be what Turkish authorities are trying to do, that this local group is targeting the United States. Let's just slow down, though, and also point out that nobody's claimed responsibility for this yet. So, I mean, we're really in the hours after this happened trying to figure it out.
All right. So would that leave the possibility open for some of the Kurdish separatist groups that have been operating?
Absolutely. The possibility is wide open. There could have been involvement of Kurdish groups. There could also be an al-Qaeda element here, and I think we got to watch it carefully. I think what's different about this is, I know we got to bring up Benghazi and the September 11 attack. I think immediately what we can point out that's different is that Turkey is a law enforcement environment that's very, very different from what you had in eastern Libya September, where you really got a post-dictatorship war zone with roving groups, armed groups that were rebels, that some are linked to al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb. What you've got in Turkey is a situation where I think you can count on the FBI, U.S. investigators working with close ally with Turkish authorities to actually probe into this, and we should be able to get a story of who exactly was behind it, what the motivations were, and why the U.S. Embassy was targeted.
And I would assume also that the U.S. Embassy in Ankara is not in an isolated area. I mean, Ankara is the capital of the country, so there would be security around.
Lots of security. In fact, the State Department today has been saying, State Department spokeswoman Victoria Nuland came out and said, look, the reason that this attack was involved really the death of only the suicide bomber and then one of the local security guard was because security was quite good at this facility, even as this facility is due for a significant upgrade. The U.S. Embassy in Ankara, Turkey, actually dates back to the 1950s, and it's on the list of embassies that State Department leaders from various administrations over the last 20 years have wanted to upgrade and have asked for funding to do so from Congress. So I think, though, that the idea that there was actually legitimate, really strong security there, and that's why this suicide bomber was caught up in the outer ring of that security where the bomb was detonated.
Now, do you happen to know, are the security personnel at the U.S. Embassy in Ankara, are they American troopers? Do they also have private security firms, or are there local Turkish?
There are both. I don't know actually specifically, but from what I've been able to glean today, you've got both U.S. And then private local Turkish ones. Now, this is really a good question. It's interesting because one of the recommendations of the internal State Department review of the Benghazi attacks, you recall this accountability review board that got a bunch of press last month, one of the very firm recommendations of it was that the State Department in the United States needed to wean itself off of using local security guards and be more self-sufficient. So, you know, I think it's we got to be realistic here and to assume that you know, while Hillary Clinton made a big show of going up on the Hill and saying, right, you know, absolutely, all of the recommendations of this review board were taken seriously and we're going to implement, of course they're not going to be able to implement it in a matter of weeks. So it's, you know, you had Ed Royce, who's the new chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, right, come out today and say that this is just another example of why security needs to be taken very seriously and some of these recommendations and initiatives need to be taken up immediately.
Speaking of security, and I don't know if you know the answer to this question off the top of your head, but there has been some speculation and actually some pushback about embassies, particularly in Cairo, not even having armed guards. Is that the case in Ankara as well? Are the guards armed?
I have not actually been to this particular embassy in Turkey. What I can tell you, though, from being at the U.S. embassy that used to be in Damascus, Syria, next door to Turkey, in the mid-2000s, so it was post-9/11 era, that there were not armed guards hanging out outside all the time. That's, you know, even in the post-9/11 era, that has not been the protocol. I mean, on paper, it might look like there's this beefed-up security and machine gun-toting Marines everywhere, but the reality of the current world is that a lot of these embassies don't have that. What they'll have is a force posture and a footprint where there are going to be security agents in the area monitoring who's coming in and out. And then once you actually approach the embassy facility, you're going to encounter extreme layers of security as you go. Immediately, you're going to come up against an armed guard in the outer ring who wants you to go through a security check where you've got to, you know, whatever you've got on your computer and you're searched down.
And by the way, that's where this bomber was stopped, right, in the outer ring.
Right.
All right. So what we don't know is whether or not the guards, the security personnel, actually had live rounds in their chambers then.
In this particular case, no. I don't think, and you know, right, that's a question that I don't have an answer to that. Yeah.
Well, then let me go to this point. Clearly, the State Department, unlike Benghazi, was on top of this very quickly. Victoria Nuland quickly commenting about it. I have to believe that there was some kind of a public relations lesson learned.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and you know, and I think if you want to tickle the conspiratorial side of all of this, I mean, you've got to ask the question of, you know, well, isn't it convenient that this is not another Al-Qaeda attack? I mean, it's what's interesting is
But we don't know that for certain.
We don't know that for certain, but what's interesting in coming out of the White House was was quick to call this a terrorist attack today. Jay Carney, the spokesman for Barack Obama, without saying that. But, you know, I think what's also interesting is that, both at the White House and over here at the State Department today, the immediate response has been actually similar to what it was to Benghazi. Apart from this, let's just call it terrorism rhetoric that's come out. The response has been, well, we got to wait and see a little bit. We don't want to jump to conclusions. Yeah. This is actually really like a hallmark of the Obama administration. This is how they handle these types of things. They don't like to pin themselves to one way of describing it immediately.
But obviously nobody came out and said we think a video is involved. I mean, this was not a spontaneous attack.
No, but you know, let's also point out the timing of this. I think it would be really cursory and naive of us to ignore that this came on the day that Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was departing from the State Department.
Right.
John Kerry, as we speak, is being sworn in a private ceremony. He'll be publicly sworn in next week. I mean, you know, that on Hillary Clinton's last day there was a terrorist attack. It's really just a complicated case. It's going to be very hard. I think any investigator has to be looking at that and say, well, there's some connection between the timing of the attack.
And there have been, obviously, there have been statements by terrorist groups, Islamist terrorist groups in Mali now saying, get ready because we consider all of the West our enemy, not just France.
Right. Now, you're referring to yesterday's developments with al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb saying we need to target. Well, I think, you know, one of the things, now that you bring up Mali, that's kind of interesting is just the way that story has kind of unfolded here in the last 2 weeks. I mean, the Islamist forces that were holding Timbuktu and some of the other cities and historic places in Mali have fallen so quickly. I mean, French troops rolled in there, 2 weeks ago and already have basically taken control of the country. So, you know, it's a developing crisis, I think, for the U.S. posture in that part of the world is what is happening with these kind of loose-knit al-Qaeda replica and al-Qaeda-linked type organizations. I think we really got to watch very closely and see. What's really important, I think, and this is something that's kind of behind the scenes here at the State Department, is this sense that the United States can't be taking its eye off the ball.
Well, I know you're not taking your eye off the ball, Guy. We've got to leave it right there. But thanks for the update, and we'll keep pressing on this. We'll be back right after this.